Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Garrett Kaiser. He's just written a book called Privacy. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Privacy, isn't this something that we pretty much take for granted these days?
Well, I think we have taken it for granted, and I think in many ways people still do, but I think that in view of certain developments, people are starting to think about it more and starting to ask themselves whether they're able to take it for granted if they wish to continue preserving some semblance of what that word has meant in our society up until recently.
What impelled you to write this particular book?
Well, a few things. I mean, first of all, I'm breathing the same air as everyone else and have my antenna up to the same phenomena as everyone else and realized that privacy was an issue that was being much discussed. And I wanted to see if I could explore it and perhaps provide some helpful insights. On a more personal level, I wrote it because I am myself a very private person, sometimes even a reclusive person, although those two things don't mean the same thing, and at the same time, someone whose politics might be described as very socially oriented. I believe in a society that aims to be a beloved community with true liberty and true justice, including economic justice for all of its members, and so that led me to wonder if there wasn't some kind of a tension, as there surely is, between some of my political views and some of my personal propensities, and to see if that, you know, represented a contradiction or a paradox that could be worked through. And so that that impelled me to try to tackle the subject.
Well, after I finished reading your book last night, I was thinking, well, what am I going to ask him? And then I felt a slight sense of trepidation because I realized that just about any question that I asked might be considered an invasion of your privacy.
Well, not necessarily. I think that, you know, privacy has to do with reciprocity, and it has to do with choice. One of the points I make in the book is that if you don't choose your privacy, then it's not even privacy, it's something else. It's isolation, it's alienation, it's loneliness. And likewise, I think when for privacy to be truly robust and meaningful, there has to be some equality and reciprocity between the persons involved, as there is in the case of an interview such as this one, and as there is not in a situation of voyeurism or surveillance where the person behind the camera has all the knowledge and all the power, and you in front of the camera lens, probably not even knowing that you're in front of the camera lens, have none of that. And someone else can see you, but you can't see that person. So getting back to your comment that started it, I would not feel my privacy invaded by your asking nearly any question, provided you understood that I might choose not to answer it. It's your right to ask questions, and I don't feel my privacy is invaded, unless those questions are based on information that I feel you ought not to have, or unless you try to press me against my will to give answers that I don't want to provide. But you don't seem like the type of person who would do that. And if you knew me better, you would know I'm probably not the type of person with whom anyone would want to do that or want to do it for very long.
Garrett Kaiser joins us. His book is Privacy. In the book, you describe a situation where a woman is pregnant and she doesn't want to know about a test that's been done on her unborn child. And you say she wanted the privacy of not knowing. And it makes me think about what you just said. And for a lot of us, isn't that really what we want? We don't want to know how our privacy is being invaded. We'd rather pretend it's not happening.
Well, true. And whether that's a right to privacy or an exercise in denial, I don't know. In the case of the pregnant woman mentioned in my book, it was she who said that she did not want to know, and she was exercising her freedom of choice around her own body and the body of her unborn child, and in regard to her medical treatment. In other words, she was the person who was setting the parameters of information and access to herself. That said, I think you're right that many people don't want to know how their privacy is being invaded, but I suppose I would have difficulty seeing that as an exercise of the right to privacy, since the person would be saying that, pretending a certain indifference to how that right was being taken away. It seems that, to me, off the cuff, that for a right to have much meaning for an individual, it has to include some awareness of what that right means and some willingness to struggle or to fight or to resist in order to preserve that right. Otherwise, it's sort of a passing privilege.
Well, over the last decade, it seems like our privacy has really been getting eroded. And we have all this technology happening, the so-called smartphones, the GPS, the internet, 9/11, so many things that seem to be conspiring to take away our privacy.
Well, yes, and you've named two of what I would see as the three major factors in that erosion, and they're interrelated factors in my view. One is the threat of terrorism, which is, of course, a very real threat. People die from it. And the other is a growth in the development of devices that enable us to surveil one another and enable governments, and not just governments, but corporations, to watch individuals, citizens, and consumers. Although in the case of the technology, I feel that sometimes we focus too much on the gadgets themselves and not enough on the ideology we bring to those gadgets, which I can talk about some more if you want me to. And then there's a third factor, which is, I think, a kind of culture that's grown up, perhaps in part as a reaction to those first two phenomena, and a culture that sees openness and transparency as an unqualified good, and even with individuals, whereas our nation was founded with the idea that governments ought to be transparent and individuals ought to have some right to the protection of their private affairs. And yet we're in a culture, and the causes of that culture, the contributions to it, are of course also very complex and come from a number of causes and sources. But that culture tends to promote the idea that if you're a well-adjusted, healthy individual, then you have no inhibitions and hang-ups. It's sort of a flip-side Victorianism. In my book, I talk about the new prudery. It's almost a kind of reverse prudery that says I'm very righteous and I have all kinds of rectitude and upstanding qualities if I show you my operation scars on demand, you know.
Garrett Keyser joins us. His book is Privacy. You're really great at turning a phrase. I think one of my favorite quotes in here is, we are under siege by the vacuous as much as by the vicious. And I think about the billion, almost a billion users of Facebook who are out there using terms like friend and share. And I'm not referring to Sonny and Cher.
No. Well, when I wrote that sentence, we're under attack by the vacuous as much as by the vicious, I certainly was referring to some of the phenomena that you're talking about, a very narrow view of sharing, which, as I say in the first sentence of the book, takes in personal information but never seems to refer to personal wealth, the degradation of the word friend. And this is not to dump on anyone who Facebooks. I know some very fine people who Facebook, although sometimes I joke and say, you know, which of your Facebook friends feeds the cat when you go away? but I think that to be condescending about all this and I'm not saying your question is, but I don't want to seem to be either, because I think we should look at look with compassion at people in a society whose jobs, in many cases, are somewhat meaningless, who are, due to various social and economic factors, deprived of their full potential, alienated from their neighbors, alienated from their work, and who are really seeking fulfillment of that basic human need. Hegel said it was one of our most fundamental needs, the need to be acknowledged, the need to be beheld and appreciated in our full humanness. And I sometimes even put this rhetorical question to people when I talk about privacy. I'll say, stop and think of anyone you know who lives what you would regard as a rich private life, and which includes intimate relationships, and someone who has meaningful work, and someone who has a sensuous enjoyment of the world. And which of those people are rifling through their neighbor's garbage to find out stuff about them, or peeping through their windows, or surfing the net to find out the latest wardrobe malfunction of the stars? If your life is meaningful in its private sphere, I think you respect the privacy of others, and I think you're also more willing to engage in public life. But if that's deprived, if you're deprived of that, then I think you're more likely to want to look at other people's lives and the details, the juicy details, to see if they might be a little bit more fascinating than your life is, or to expose the juicy details of your own life in the hope that somebody out there might find those details more interesting than they are for you, and provide you with some of the acknowledgement and appreciation that's lacking in your life. So it's sort of just a first step attack, I think, to look at some of what goes on in social media and see the vacuousness of that. I think what we also need to do is say, what's behind that vacuousness and what makes it so appealing for certain human beings?
The book is Privacy. Garrett Keyser wrote it. It's a part of a very intriguing series on Picador. It's called Big Ideas, Small Books. It's a quick read. It's I wouldn't call it a light read, but it's an inexpensive book. It just came out in paperback, and you have some ideas in here that just really intrigued me. And one of them was that the protection of privacy is an environmental imperative.
Yes, at least it is indirectly, and I think it is in a couple of ways, and that is that to build a sustainable society environmentally, in other words, to take what are limited and finite resources and limited and finite space on this finite planet, which is in reality, not in virtual reality. It's not a screensaver. It's a geological and biological entity. And to build a sustainable society there, one that human beings will willingly accept, we need to guarantee some privacy, some protection of the private self, some protection of intimate relationships. Otherwise, people are not going to buy into it. You can preach it all you want, but the question, short of establishing a kind of green totalitarianism, is are people going to buy into it? And I think that if privacy is not part of the package, many people are going to be reluctant to. And we maintain our privacy in our society by many things which environmentally are not all that good, you know, by big yards and turning on air conditioners so that neighbors can't hear us and we don't hear neighbors, by having multiple houses, you know, one in the area we work and then a remote one somewhere else that we travel to with lots of carbon-emitting transportation. So I think privacy and environmentalism go together in more ways than people might think. And there is one additional one, And that is to maintain privacy and to honor the environment and really to honor any value you can think of. You have to be willing, I believe, to make some kinds of renunciations, to make some kinds of sacrifices. I mean, we recycle in our house, but it's not my favorite thing. You know, it's basically, it's a pain in the neck to clean out all those cans and bottles and stick them into bins. But we do it because we think it's important, and because up until very recently we had a daughter living in this house who would have made our lives miserable if we didn't. But that value led us to make some renunciations. And I think that if your privacy is violated by devices that provide you with convenience, and if that convenience is your chief value, then your privacy is on very shaky ground. A good privacy rights advocate, like a good environmentalist, like a good social activist, has to be willing to say, no, if you're going to make me sit on the back of the bus, as nice as it is to ride the bus, I'm not riding the bus. Mm-hmm. And that's what the step that it takes for things to change. And it's a hard step, and many of us are not willing to make it.
You just mentioned your daughter. Was she the one who related that conversation that she had had, I think, at a camp where they posed the question, what's a woman?
Yes.
That was an intriguing conversation to read about.
Yes, it was.
And your thoughts on it. And then you get to the question, which you said, well, this is where I stop, and that's, what's a human being?
Yeah, I think that there are certain questions that, I mean, it is human to ask questions, and it's human to ask complicated questions, and it's both human and good to question basic assumptions and the meanings of certain words, like woman and like man and like human being. I support that. I do it myself, and it's part of what makes life beautiful. Where I begin to grow impatient, as I did in the passage that you mentioned, is when this kind of questioning begins to be used as a dodge for recognizing serious social problems and dealing with them concretely. I was at a book event the other night. A very bright young man started talking to me in a question and answer period about privacy, and he said, you know, what about this, the mythology of the self? Isn't privacy really based on a mythology of the self? And aren't we in our, you know, postmodern era beginning to question the idea of individual selfhood? And isn't that just an outgrowth of a certain, you know, bourgeois culture that now we're getting beyond? And you can have great discussions about that in a coffee shop, and I would love to do that. But after the event, I went back to the hotel that my publisher was paying for me to stay at, and somebody else was there to scrub the toilet and change the bed. I mean, on that level, there's a very clear sense of myself and yourself. Uh-huh. If there's one piece of bread and I'm eating it and you're not, the sense of selfhood and who's me and who's you is very clearly defined. And so this is why I sometimes grow impatient with semantic or philosophical questions when they begin to be used as an excuse not to act in regard to very evident and pressing problems of inequality and injustice. So we'll act after we define the terms, and let's conduct the conversation in such a way that the terms never get defined.
Mm. Sounds like your event at McNally Jackson. And that's one of those questions where you start thinking, well, maybe privacy is an elitist issue.
Well, I question, you know, the word elitist tends to be one that raises my hackles. And again, it tends to reduce questions of inequality and achieving social justice to a matter of etiquette. So in other words, God forbid someone be quote-unquote an elitist by professing a love for classical music or by having education or by pointing out even that someone else doesn't have good dental care, that would be an elitist thing to make. So we'll be non-elitists, and what that often boils down to is we will allow the existing inequalities to go on, but we'll be very polite in tiptoeing around them. And we'll even convert that etiquette into this most disingenuous kind of pretense in which we almost make poverty a kind of cultural difference. So, you know, some people like to eat steak off a plate, and some people like to eat garbage out of a dumpster. And we don't want to be elitists or make people feel bad. So let's just say it's a difference. It's part of being human. It's sort of a multicultural thing. Well, I have another word for what it is, but I'm not going to say it on the radio.
Oh, we can edit it out.
I'll save you the trouble.
Okay. Garrett Kaiser joins us. His book is Privacy. One of my great privacy peeves is unnecessary noise, whether it's the dog that's barking all night keeping me awake or the F-16 training flight that keeps going over my house at treetop level, whatever the noise might be. I just find it incredibly annoying and a real invasion of my privacy. And I understand that you wrote a book about noise.
I did. It was the book I wrote before this one, which is called The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want, a book about noise. And I have not read it. Well, that's fine. You share that distinction with with many other people. I sometimes ask myself which of my books I would have read if I hadn't written them. But I think that it's a good book, or I hope it's a good book, and it seems to have been meaningful for those people who have read it. I think the noise question and the privacy question and the environmental question that we were talking about before, you know, can all be connected as questions of scale and justice. How much do I have a right to consider mine? And when does that degree of mine become such that it's reducing someone else's right to make a claim, a mortal claim, on a certain amount of time and pleasure and space in this limited planet? And that's an environmental question. It's a question about privacy. It's, you know, in other words, does my right to privacy include the right to beat my family and not have other people interfere with it? Historically, privacy has sometimes boiled down to that, in which case I would say this is taking privacy and extending it beyond its rightful bounds. And likewise, in noise. I have a right to make all the noise I want, but when it enters your house and your life, when does my right become oppression of you? Mm. And so, you know, finding out what's my share? What's my share of time? And we have a generation even of this civilization that its rhetoric to the contrary seems to think that its share not only includes the 70 lifespan of each individual, but it includes the right to steal resources from coming generations. Hmm. That we want our air, and we'll also take their air. We will run certain devices even at the expense of their not having beaches to go to because the water's risen so high when they come about. I mean, that's really related to the person who plays a stereo very loud and says, I don't care if it keeps you from sleeping. It's what I want to hear.
Yeah. The book is Privacy. Garrett Kaiser wrote it. He's joined us on the program today. You move very quickly in this book, and you have wonderful, short, pithy sentences, and you quote a lot of people, and you have a quote in there from the late founder of Apple Computer, who famously said, a ding in the universe, and then you make sort of a, well, I don't know, I laughed, but it was a really kind of a sad thing to laugh about what you were, you have to read the book to see what you referred to as another ding, but... did you find any irony at all about the burglarization of this fellow's home recently and that someone stole a bunch of his personal computer devices? I mean, this just when I read your account of him saying that, and then I read about his stuff being stolen, it just really clicked with me.
Well, it probably is ironic, although it's certainly not the only irony that surrounds privacy and technology. As far as I hadn't, frankly, heard about the burglarization of his home, and although I happen to be no fan of this person's ideology and what I know of some of his business practices, this does not mean that I would rejoice in anyone experiencing theft or violence or anything else that I wouldn't want to experience myself. But there are plenty of ironies surrounding the development of some technological devices and privacy. Many of these devices were created in zones of privacy. They were created in private clubs. Apple Computer begins in a club. Facebook begins in a Harvard dorm. Mm-hmm. In very privileged private environments. And then the people who've developed them have reaped astounding financial rewards, which allow them to secure unparalleled zones of privacy for themselves, things that pharaohs would never even have dreamed of, even as they tell the masses of people that privacy is something that they have to give up and that is a luxury they can no longer afford to have, even as the people telling them that are hoarding great quantities of privacy, to say nothing of money, for themselves.
And that is ironic.
Yeah. And it's also disgraceful, if I may say so.
Well, this is a fascinating topic, and it's one that affects all of us. And it's really been a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be on.
The book is Privacy, written by Garrett Keyser. He joined us on the program today from an undisclosed location.
This was just a delightful interview, and I'm always so pleased when I'm interviewed by somebody who's actually opened my book.
Just a real pleasure to talk to you.
And with you, and I'm glad that you found my book engaging and worth your time and trouble.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. My guest has been Garrett Keyser. His new book is Privacy. And we mentioned his previous book during that interview. It's called The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want. Naomi Klein has said about it, "Very few writers combine thoughtfulness and rage as satisfyingly as Garrett Keyser. This is a profound meditation on power, its painful absence, and its flagrant abuse." Be sure to tune into the program next week when we'll have the long-anticipated new book from Juno Diaz. It's a collection of stories featuring his alter ego, Junior, and it's called This Is How You Lose Her in the Book Nook. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.